Fall 1960, Rich's position as the leading department store in Atlanta made it the focal point for student protests for the desegregation of downtown. The students came from the city's African-American colleges, like Morris Brown and Clark College, and they numbered in the hundreds. They led picketing of Rich's, as well as sit-ins and a boycott. Former Morehouse student and leader of the group, Lonnie King.
And we also made the decision to bring in Martin King. I called Martin and asked him to join us, and I explained what we were trying to do. He did not agree at first. His daddy and his brother and his sister, they all, you just came here from Alabama and you're on probation down there and, you know, so why don't you bypass this? So he told me all the things that all the concerns, so forth and so on. And so I said, ML, we need you to go. If we get you arrested tomorrow, it's going to be international news. And so he was still reluctant. I said, let me just finally say this to you. ML, you can't leave from the back. You got to leave from the front. Now, are you going to leave from the back or are you going to leave from the front? That was dead silence on the phone, all these folks. He said, LC, they call me LC. He said, I'll see you at the bridge tomorrow. What time should I be there? I said, 10 o'clock. And all he said to me was, make sure you get two of the most beautiful girls in the world to go to jail with us. And, well, you know the rest of that. He did meet me there, and we went to jail, and the rest you know about.
This kind of nonviolent protest has the great benefit of giving a weapon to people who previously were not thought to be active participants in this movement.
Julian Bond went to Morehouse College and was another leader in the student group.
Up till then, it was thought if you wanted to fight against segregation, you had to be a lawyer like Thurgood Marshall, or you had to be a minister with great oratorical gifts like Martin Luther King. All of a sudden, ordinary people, college students, or even people who'd never even been to college. Everybody can sit down.
But at the same time, though, you really, I think, have to determine, is this cause worth dying for? And once you make the decision that whatever the protest is that you are being a part of is something that is worth dying for, then there's a kind of freedom that comes to you, kind of a peace that comes. We didn't know whether or not we were going to make it. I guess the odds were not in our favor, if you look at history. But the time had come. The ingredients were there. So we could bake the cake because we had all the ingredients.
It was also a kind of in-your-face statement.
In 1961, Charles Black was a student at Morehouse College.
Many efforts have been made over the years by the previous generations of Negroes, coloreds, as we had been called, efforts to negotiate and to accommodate and to, you know, register folk to vote and vote for the lesser of the evils and all that. And we were impatient, you know, to make a more revolutionary rather than evolutionary change.
And let me tell you what really broke the Campbells' back.
Lydia Tucker Douglas was a student at Clark College at the time of the sit-ins.
Easter came after we had been picketing for about 6 months. And we sent out another appeal to all African Americans in the Atlanta area to send in their Rich's charge cards to president of Atlanta Life Insurance Company, Jesse Hill.
An interesting thing is we were able to convince hundreds of people in the community to send us their credit cards. We had the slogan, close your account with segregation and open an account with freedom.
So after that happened, then Ivan Allen called all of the big business boys together from downtown and said, look, we got to do something and do it quickly. And it was right after then that all public accommodations were open to African Americans. We went to the Magnolia Room and had tea. And we made sure we were dressed properly, as I said, with our gloves. And there were no incidences except for the stairs. And people went and got other people and brought them to see us as if we were some freaks on exhibit. And we sat and we chatted and we finished our tea and we left.
I had one little interesting thing that happened.
Charles Black.
The chairman of the board of Rich's at one time was Frank Neely. And after our desegregation stuff had come and gone, and a few months had passed, he had some of the student leaders out to his home. And it was around Christmas time. And we stood around his piano, and somebody played tunes, and we sang songs and all that. And it was just a very special moment. He was an old guy at the time. One of the things we sang was, "She wheeled a wheelbarrow through streets wide and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh, alive, alive, oh, alive." I'd never heard that song before. And it was a very special, warm evening at Frank Neely's home.
I believe the Christmas tree will probably be a very dear remembrance for all of us. I know it is for me. When my husband was in the State House of Representatives, Mr. Riches invited all of the state reps and their families to come to the roof, and they served hot chocolate. My Barry was 2 years old, and I had him in my lap, and when the lights went up, he said, "Oh!" He was so amazed with those lights going on. So I have some very fond memories of Riches. Then when I set in, I wouldn't call it a fond memory, but I would call it a memory of achievement. To have set in and I was arrested from Riches. So that's a memory of achievement.
Kate Sweeney, WABE News.